Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. So I hope everybody had a safe and healthy weekend of religiously wearing a damn mask. We actually left the house this past weekend, which is a rare occurrence. We've been pretty strict with the, you know, stay-at-home orders and have done that pretty well since the beginning, trying to take it pretty seriously. But we did go to the Chicago Botanical Gardens this past weekend. Apparently it's a hot ticket, sold out already, just like zoo lights and everything else. But it's a variety of light shows and decorations, and you just kind of walk through. You start in one spot, you walk through in an orderly fashion, safely distanced from others. I picked up a little eggnog with some Captain Morgan rum in it along the route. And then you come out the other side and you leave and you go home. So it's a much smaller event. They keep it spaced out. The tickets are sort of timed each hour to limit the flow of people through it. It was actually nice to get out. Still got some pretty fantastic weather in December here in Chicago, which you can't take for granted because you could blink and we could be under 11 inches of snow before we know it. And in some sad news as a final point of housekeeping, the wrestling world lost a legend in Pat Patterson in this past week. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, I feel like everyone has heard of the concept of the Royal Rumble. It's one of my favorite events. I actually got to attend one a couple years back. You probably remember me talking about that if you've been an avid neater. But he passed away, and he was the inventor of the Royal Rumble, amongst many other things, arguably the second most influential person in wrestling history. So rest in peace, Mr. Patterson. So we've got a few things to cover this week. In the upfront undercard, we've got two topics. I'm going to dig in a little bit briefly on the Salesforce acquisition of Slack for an insane amount of money. I'm also going to review some responses that are coming from vendors with regards to CNAMing and Apple ITP and some of the concepts that we've discussed over the last few weeks. And then for the main event, Experian launched their 2020 Global Identity and Fraud Report, and I thought that it would be worthwhile getting into. I think identity and identity verification is something that everyone is worried about. I think it fits nicely with Apple ITP and some of the decisions that are being made by organizations and the control and ownership of first-party data. So we'll dig into that report at a high level as well. So we talked about it last week, but the rumored Salesforce Slack acquisition actually did go through for $27.7 billion, which is massive. And everybody's raving about it on the Salesforce and the Slack side for obvious reasons. You know, the Salesforce CEO basically made the comment, and I quote, "It's a match made in heaven. Together, Salesforce and Slack will shape the future of enterprise software and transform the way that everyone works in the all-digital work from anywhere world." Now, I was speaking to a buddy of mine who is an avid neater as well, and we were trying to remember the name of it, but I had to do some quick Google searching in the Google machine there to look it up, but it was Chatter. And I remember being forced to try to use Chatter in Salesforce while we were at Ubiquity. That was how they expected our global teams to communicate. And it was a train wreck, as was that technology. So when it comes to communicating amongst an organization, I think it's fair to say that has been sunset now in lieu of Slack. We talked a bit about the sort of competition between Salesforce and Microsoft. This obviously just draws that line even further, because Microsoft Teams and Slack are definitely head-to-head. As I mentioned previously, I'm a Teams guy, although we use Slack for our fantasy football channel. So I know there are some folks from Salesforce that listen. If you can ensure that our fantasy football league maintains a free access to Slack despite your giant $28 billion investment, I would appreciate that, because it's very helpful for managing the league, and I am the people's commish. You know, it's just overall, I think it's an interesting deal.
it brings corporate communication closely together. It wasn't something when you're in Salesforce, it's really difficult to kind of share details outside of the opportunity records from a CRM perspective. And then when you start to look at the larger sort of vertical clouds that they've built, or even just Journey Builder and several other options, there's a lot of communication that needs to happen across the business as you're facilitating campaigns or initiatives, or even just working together to deliver upon projects across the org. So this brings Slack potentially an opportunity to operate at the enterprise embedded in a much larger install base as well, because Salesforce is everywhere. So I'll be intrigued to see how this gets merged in. There have been several comments that said that it would stay independent as well. So I'm hoping that means my free subscription will maintain, but also for the rest of you that are using it for whatever reason, it should stay that way and still be available for you as well, at least for the foreseeable future. And I was just about to jump into the CNAME conversation, which we'll come on to in a moment, but folks, we've got a run-in. I saw something posted online that I thought was quite amusing, so I'm just going to share it, and saw it while I was recording. But Statista put out some statistics for a survey that they did outlining the most and least trusted professions in the UK. And topping the list was nurses, which makes sense, because if you talk to any nurse, you realize that they are the ones that do the majority of the work when you're interfacing at the hospital or you're there to get something fixed. And all the way at the bottom, below the politicians, 13% of people said that they trusted advertising executives. So the least trusted profession across all of the professions in the UK. And I'm curious to see if some global numbers come up around this as well, which I'll bring to the forefront in an upcoming episode. But folks, advertising executives have lost the battle of trust across the entire UK, according to this survey from Statista, which speaks to the issues in advertising that have existed for many years. And frankly, some reform is badly needed there. And that's where Apple ITP and a lot of these changes and the IDFA adjustments all come into play as well. Everything sort of centers around this lack of trust in the advertising sector. So that now brings us to the CNAME conversation. Now, folks, I have covered this to varying degrees going all the way back to well over a year and a half ago. Apple ITP had a trajectory. It was pretty obvious what that trajectory was going to be, and the fact that it was looking to limit what third-party solutions were able to do on websites for brands and other third-party interactions. So if you're looking for more of the backstory, I know it's difficult in a lot of podcast apps to search for other archived episodes. And normally the subscriptions and listening on those platforms is best for me and getting the podcast out there. But you can go to BillBruno.com. You can type CNAME into the search, and all of the episodes that have CNAME as a tag will show up. Then you can start to look at those and see what that means and start to understand the ramifications, because I'm not going to spend any time on that today. What I will say is that I have had a varying degree of feedback and interactions with individuals. I'm not going to bring those online. They were trusted conversations behind the scenes, and I don't feel the need to call anybody out. I think we've hashed it out professionally and talked through our opinions. But there is a Measure Slack channel. So Slack is just the theme of this week's episode. And in that channel, Adobe had come up with a response to several of the leaders in the analytics industry that are part of this Slack channel. I'm personally not in that channel, but it was shared with me from various sources. And it was also posted on the website of Corey Underwood. If you guys aren't familiar with Corey, I read a lot of his articles because he seems to be on the same wavelength as me when it comes to privacy and compliance and security. And I think he does a fantastic job of technical analysis of changes like ITP and other things going on around the industry that may or may not even be related to analytics, but can be more of a security focus. So definitely recommend checking out his blog. It's got fantastic content. But Adobe did write a response in this Slack channel, and I know that they've been in the field communicating as well, because I've heard it from several sources. There hasn't been as much noise from Google and others, but I think, you know, the one blanket statement I'm going to make here is this example is coming from Adobe. My guess is many other vendors are making these same types of claims and striking up the conversation from the same perspective. Any third-party solution that is relying on CNAME to set a first-party cookie via JavaScript is now in trouble for anything across Apple. And in the US, that's over 30% on average of web browsing, and it's over 55% of mobile browsing. So just to put that in perspective. Now, what Adobe did say was pretty amusing. They talked about this being an overreach from Apple. They then talk about A records. If you listened in the archives, I talked about A records and how they assign to an IP address and become very difficult in a CDN. And Adobe agreed with that and said that would be next to impossible to be able to do that. They could potentially do that, but a lot of that would cause a lot of effort, and it's an ever-changing environment, and it wouldn't be all that accurate. And when you're already dealing with tagging-based solutions that struggle with accuracy to begin with, you don't want to introduce even more inaccuracy at the front end when it comes to trying to persevere or persist a digital identity. Now, they talked a little bit about what they would offer. They talked about their bulk data insertion API. There's a lot of people out there coming out with webinars right now around the bulk data insertion API. Candidly, it's the way that you can take Celebrus data, which has an identity that isn't impacted by CNAME because of the way that we're patented and the way that we set those identities. It's a way for us to inject our data into Adobe Analytics as an example, as well as if you had tagged for it. And they talk about using your own IDs as a customer. And this is where I thought it was really interesting. They talk about how you can bring in all of your own first-party IDs. They talk about the fact that the long-term picture is that browser and app identifiers are going to be somewhat limited, but that Adobe provides the tools for you to tie those into more durable IDs to expand what you can do. Now, here's the challenge that I have with that. This isn't 2005, and I remember the argument in 2005 where it was, well, put a login in front of everything, make, you know, gate your content so you can understand who those individuals are. That doesn't really work. And the competitive environment that we're in these days, you're not, you know, going to get people that are all that happy if you start just gating a bunch of your content so that you can get some sort of identifier that you can use downstream that supplants the gap and the miss that you have from a cookie perspective. Now, I know that there are several salespeople out there from Adobe, Tealium, Google, and others that are talking about moving the ID and the cookie setting server side and using tag management to be able to manage that. Sure, that's something that could be done. It could be designed. Again, it puts a lot of onus on the client to manage and maintain that in an environment where they're already struggling to do so, given the ever-changing landscape of web and mobile and how quickly those changes are happening. Server-side tag management does not solve all of these issues. It's an option to help try to make it more accurate, but it will still find itself being quite inaccurate as it pertains to several variables and several outcomes, and trying to manage and capture all of the micro interactions across a client-side journey. You know, there are benefits, absolutely, to server-side tag management. I talked about that in the archives as well. You can go ahead and search that out and how it centralizes some of that, but it just shifts the effort. The effort then is in the mapping that you're doing within tag management instead of the coding that you're doing on the page. So it's kind of a wash in terms of effort, and it's a heck of a lot harder to debug. But I'm digressing a little bit. I think the fact that Adobe's looking to have you provide more first-party IDs into their system to make their identity stitching better just points to the fact that this really isn't a customer-centric solution. It's a behavior analysis tool. It's great for linking into A/B multivariate tests, but it's not a cross-platform, cross-device, cross-channel analytics application. I think the implications of providing your first-party identifiers from your consumers into the Adobe environment is a risk. I think with CPRA, which we talked about in the past, I think with just general privacy and compliance, and even some of the breaches that have happened at Folksam, and I know several other places that have kind of kept it quiet where this has happened, where you've breached and provided customer data to third-party solutions that were outside of what you had outlined for consumers and were against your corporate policies. So this picture just doesn't really work. Adobe does go on to do the avoidance. We'll call it the Adobe avoidance, but I think the other vendors are doing this as well, and I've seen some of the comments around this. It's really easy to try to shove it under the rug and say, oh, it's just Safari and it's just Apple. You know, look at your data to see how important that is. And that's not really the point, right? Sure, for some brands, it might not be all that important. It is just Safari, but depending on the market you're in, just Safari can mean quite a bit. I mean, in the US, having mobile browsing, over 55% of that on Safari is astonishing. And that means over half of your visitors are on a 7-day expiration. When it comes to web, it varies around the world, but it's still, you know, in most cases, the second most popular browser out there. So you're basically trying to shove that under the rug and say, well, it's not that big of a deal. And, you know, it may be right. You could dig into your data to see what it looks like. But I think at the end of the day, what this really comes down to is the separation of church and state, where in this case, it's the separation of behavioral analytics for customer experience management and session replay and things along those lines that are a little less scientific, and customer-centric analytics, which is completely different. sits on the other side of the fence and needs to be focused around identity graphs and just digital identity that can be persisted and that is in line with best practices, that's 100% compliant, and doesn't get you in trouble with any of the legislation out there in the world today. So I thought the response was expected. If you had given me a pen and say, write what the vendors would start to say about this, this is exactly what I would have expected them to start saying. Don't believe everything you hear. The salespeople that are out on the field for these technologies obviously are trying to brush past this and try to make it a non-issue. They're trying to promise solutions that aren't in the market today that they promise they'll build towards. But you also have to remember that some of these solutions in the space have been promising a solution for Apple's ITP going all the way back to January of this year, promising it in April and then in June, and now promising it with no end date. So you have to start to question whether or not and the vendor is right for you, or what the role is for particular vendors in this ever-changing world. Things change, Mox. And from that perspective, you have to be aware of those changes, understand the biases, understand the gaps and the inaccuracies, and then try to align that against what's the best fit and what's the right approach for the various initiatives that you have across your business. And while I could go on and on about that, I'm just going to stop right now. I'm going to take a step back off my soapbox. We're going to end the undercard, and we're going to go ahead and jump into this week's main event as promised. Experian put out what I thought was a fantastic report around global identity and fraud. It's their 2020 Global Identity and Fraud Report. Per usual, I'm just going to give you a bit of a high level, but let's talk about the data that went into this analysis and what framed up all of the feedback and recommendations that they made. They got input from over 6,500 consumers and 650 businesses worldwide, and the whole point was to look at the complex relationship between people and the businesses around identity. And some of their research showed that there was a desire for better experience and that there was concerns around security, and that the relationship between consumers and the businesses is very much framed up by that. And as a backbone to all of that, and the reason why I picked this as the initial topic for this week and something that we'll expand upon quite a bit with ID&V and other topics here in upcoming episodes, is because digital identity finds its way into every customer decision and is the backbone of this Global Identity and Fraud Report as well. So let's quickly jump into a few of the key concepts. They have this entire section around the expectation for customer engagement and what that looks like. And there were three sort of expectations that they bring to the forefront. Security is the permission to continue the relationship. They talk about convenience being the growth driver, right? That convenience tends to drive winning relationships. And then personalization allows businesses to maximize those relationships. And those are customer expectations, all sort of focused around identity, though. And without having permission to capture, maintain, and persist that identity, this relationship isn't going to go anywhere. And that's why there's a lot of questions and why I constantly push on the idea of digital identity, of identity graphs, of control of first-party data. Because if you're not doing those things in the way that's meeting customer expectations, then you're not going to get the engagement that you're looking for. What I also thought was really funny as you dive into this was from a data perspective, in the survey, 95% of the businesses were confident in their ability to recognize their customer. But then when you looked on that on the other side, 55% of consumers don't feel recognized by businesses. So there's a huge disconnect on these two sides of the wall. You've got organizations that think that they're personalizing really well, that they're managing the identity really well, and you have over half of the consumers that were being interviewed as part of this survey saying the exact same opposite. So the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, but I think what comes forth from this is that identity is such a challenge for organizations that are relying on certain tools to manage that identity. They're unable to do that. Apple ITP and all these other changes that we've talked about are making that even worse. And as a result, the personalization that they think they're doing is not actually happening to the degree that consumers are expecting, or perhaps the decisioning, the A/B, the multivariate test, the various changes that are being done are being hit with so much latency on the web and mobile channels that consumers are being presented the default content because of that latency. Now, when you look at strategic priorities, they sort of talk about this concept of advanced analytics, and I look at that as customer-centric analytics, and that's how I generally tend to refer to it from a semantics perspective. But they dive into some of the priorities, and the top priority is for general use across the business. Over almost 60% say identity authentication is a main priority of advanced analytics, and fraud prevention is about 63% of the use, because advanced analytics, ID and verification, or IDNV, so on and so forth, are all what you look at that center around the identity of an individual. And so the organizations are recognizing that. What I also thought was funny is 57% of businesses make identity authentication, which is very different, a strategic priority for advanced analytics. And that actually fits almost perfectly with the 55% of consumers that don't feel recognized by the business. So you can kind of see, if you're not using identity authentication, if you don't have a good sense of someone's identity, then you really can't personalize to that individual or that segment. You're doing a lot more broad sort of swath personalization initiatives. And perhaps that's what's getting picked up by the consumers as not being as effective. But when you get into the data itself, just as a final point, they talk about the consumer's point of view with regards to data and how valuable they perceive it to be to businesses. And 34% of consumers responded that they don't see any value to them for sharing their data and their identity with organizations. And 66% say that they did, right? They see personal value from it. So 2/3 of consumers are sort of seeing value from sharing their data. And what was also even more alarming when you dug into the control side of that, because if you're the consumer and you're having this handshake with a business and you're choosing to give your data, your identity to that business for personalization and for them to remember you, it was very interesting that 88% of the consumers want more control over that data. They desire that control, whereas 12% said that they don't really care, that little to no control is what they look for. So you have a situation where you have these customer expectations, you have perhaps a priority issue in terms of how you're prioritizing what advanced analytics means for your business and the backbone of that and the data that goes into that if you're on the brand side or the organization side. You have 2/3 of consumers that are seeing personal value from the data, which leaves a large amount to be desired, but you have almost all of the consumers desiring more control over that data. And I think at the bedrock of all of this is education, it's transparency, and it's a full disclosure of how that data is going to be used, where it will be used, and what the consumers can expect in return by feeling comfortable enough to establish that trust with a brand and share their data. And I think this trust center is what we're going to see communicated more and more in the industry today. How do you build a first-party data trust center that allows you to empower your business, to grow your business, to expand your relationships with those consumers, but do it in a way where you're being a good steward of the data, a good steward of your consumers, and building that brand loyalty because you're meeting these consumer expectations. But with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this week's episode of Analytics Neat. Thank you again so much for listening. We'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. Please feel free to continue the conversation with me directly, either on Twitter or any social media. Text me, call me if you've got that information, LinkedIn, so on and so forth. I love conversing with neaters out there. Thank you again so much for making this podcast a success and for sharing it with your friends as well. We'll be back again next week. And until then, wear a damn mask and stay safe, folks.